Hey everyone, my name's Adam West. I play Adam West on the podcast I'm Not Adam West. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. Davis and I have been thrilled with the feedback we've been getting so far and can't believe that people actually want to listen to the weird things that we have to say. We've had a few people ask, how can they help with the show? So I wanted to give all of our listeners something that they could do that's super important and would be super helpful. We need people to go and leave reviews for us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast at. The more views we get, the more visible our podcast becomes. So please, please help me live up to my namesake, Adam West, and go and review our podcast. Thanks. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast where we talk about famous people and the names they share with less famous people who may or may not deserve to be the famous one. I'm talking about I'm Not Adam West. I'm Davis Buchanan, and as joining me as always is Adam West.
Hey, man. How are you doing today?
Hey, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It's been a pretty hectic week here. I've gotten to be on set a lot for different various projects, filming some and just like being available for others. And so it's just always good when I get to have weeks like that that set me in the film world. And so
that's awesome. Yeah. I'm glad you've had a good time, like a fun couple days of shooting. That's awesome. I'm like a little hectic too. One, because work is crazy. My wife and I are going to Turkey and Greece starting on next Tuesday. So May 1st, we're leaving. We'll come back on the 11th. So we're really excited about that trip. I think it's going to be super fun, but we are... So a summer camp I work for, we start the Friday we get back. So we'll get back like 11 p.m. on a Thursday and then start on Friday. And so I have 2 days left in the office until I have to be ready. Nice. That's kind of crazy. And then literally just now, like just before I hopped on, just finished up a game of Isle of Skye, board game. Okay. Have you ever played Isle of Skye? Do you know what it is?
But I've been to the Isle of Skye.
Well, okay, that trumps me. That's a much better story than playing the board game version of it. But Isle of Skye, you're playing a kind of a Scottish chieftain, and you're trying to develop your clan lands with – you've got sheep and whiskey and some lakes and sailboats and things like that. And you basically bid. So you draw tiles out of a bag, and then I set a price in coins on them that other people can pay to buy those tiles to put them into their kind of land. And then anything people don't buy, I spend the money on and put them into my land. So it's kind of this. I'm going to try to see.
Catan style game. It sounds like it.
So it's tiles, and they're square tiles. They're not hexagonal tiles like Catan is, but it's the same sort of negotiation as Catan is with a little bit less resource. You don't make anything. You just put stuff into your land and try to score points based on whatever combination of lakes and sheep and whiskey and mountains and whatever it is that your land is made up of. So pretty fun, pretty exciting, but took a little bit longer than I expected. So
that's awesome. It sounds better than Catan for the fact that really any game of Catan I've ever played, when you say there's negotiation, has really just turned into none of my friends sharing any things with me, and I just walk away being very jaded from the whole thing.
Exactly. So a little more interactive because you're setting prices, not just saying, okay, I'll give you 2 sheep for 3 wood, and they say, no, screw you. Yeah. You're about to win, so I'm going to help
talk
this
for
guy
a week
win.
Or something. Yeah.
Yes, so just absolutely. Like okay,
okay.
Good deal.
Well, cool, man. Turkey sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well, are you excited about who we're talking about tonight?
I am very excited. Big fan of this guy and excited to talk about him and also some of the people who share his name.
Yes. Okay. So for tonight, we have the author, the king of horror himself, Stephen King. When doing my research on him, I realized how much he's kind of not affected my life, I suppose, but how long the stuff that he has done has been like in my peripheral, you know, something that he's done like all my life. I've seen his stuff, but if you don't know him, he is a American horror author, science fiction, and he's easily one of the most well-known, best publicized authors of our generation. And so, I mean, he has, to date, he has 54 published novels,
so many.
54. Tell me to write a book, and I'll say no. I'm good.
Golly, he's so prolific. It's crazy.
So 54 novels, 6 nonfiction books, and about 200 short stories.
I'm curious, what has he written nonfiction on? I actually don't know this information. I'm curious to know, like, because I know his obviously his horror novels are super famous. You've got It, you have The Shining, Pet Sematary, for those who are fans. But I'm curious to know what he's written that's actually nonfiction, because all of it is a lot of it's set in our world, but pretty eerie or like kind of twisted versions of our world.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know. I'll have to see those and look those up.
Yeah.
Some of his popular ones, yes, are the ones you said. His known as his quote-unquote magnum opus is the Dark Tower series.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've read any of those. I've read the first one.
I started the first one, tried it, and I need to read it again. I think I would really like them, but just never – it didn't stick.
And that's kind of how I felt to it. And then after reading and hearing from other people, they said, yeah, the first one's not like the best in the series. Apparently after like three or four, that's when it really starts to get good. And it somehow everything that he does in that book series, it connects to his other things. From It, from The Shining, to some of his other things, like they all kind of like come out in there in some way, shape, or form.
So sort of a Marvel shared universe type deal kind of thing. Say that because I'm going to see Infinity War later tonight. But
oh, nice. I think it's a little bit more loosey-goosey because, again, if you've read The Dark Tower, it's set in its own, you know, world by itself, and so it's
right,
it kind of like taps into these things in different ways. So anyway, some of his notables are those. I'm just going to pick out a few of my favorites from childhood to now. The Shining went on to be, in my opinion, one of the best movies created. Weirdly, one of my favorites that I totally didn't know he did until we started doing this is a movie called Maximum Overdrive.
Okay.
You might not have ever heard of this.
I've heard of it. I've never seen it.
It's basically like he did another one called Christine, which is about a car kind of having its come to life, and it's a killer car. Kind of the same thing, but with semi-trucks and, you know, like all vehicles and anything with electronics basically turns, you know, into a human-killing death machine. And so I watched that when I was probably way too young, and still to this day, like, we'll sit down and watch that movie because it's so great. That's awesome.
Okay, good deal. So I think we talked about this a couple episodes ago, but I'm an English major, did a lot of creative writing in college, love it. I actually have a book by him that's just called On Writing that I've never read but need to, just because he really is in a lot of ways a master of his craft. Kind of take like the idea of writing horror, writing suspense books with compelling characters and interesting ideas set in our world, but kind of like mirror images of the world we live in. Really, really interesting. And so he is, I think, well respected and applauded in the writing industry for a good reason. You mind if I kind of mention a few more Stephen Kings?
Yeah.
A couple of people that we're not going to dive into, but want to make sure they get a shout out and a mention. There's a Steve King who was a Canadian sprint canoeist. He competed for Canada in the late 1970s. In the 1976 Summer Olympics in Montreal, he finished 8th in the K2 1000 meter event. So way to go. That's way faster than I could ever canoe. I don't know that I could make myself go in a specific direction that I wanted to in a canoe. And I say that not like as a self-deprecating, like, oh, that'd be funny as a joke. It's because I've done it and I know that I can't. I have a really hard time like going in a straight line in a canoe. So
yeah, I thought that he was funny. Not funny, but when we were doing our research, I passed up on the canoeist, but not before really thinking about the word canoeist is a kind of funny word. And to be known as a canoeist, like, do you go up and shake someone's head like, hello, my name is Stephen King. You may know me as a canoeist.
And they'll say, you wrote The Shining. And you say, no, canoeist. No,
but I did row very fast.
I did row very, very quickly in Canada. Steve King, 1970s Canadian canoeist, which is a very, very Canadian canoeist. It would be a fantastic band name. Anyone trademark, copyright.
Love it.
That's mine. You can't have it. Okay. Next one, I'll just mention there's a Steve King who is a current ambassador to the Czech Republic for the United States. He was an American businessman. He's a Republican Party activist, but he's the U.S. ambassador to the Czech Republic. So if you remember Michael Jordan, our hockey playing friend from our first episode, maybe some point in his life, who knows, he may have crossed paths with this Stephen B. King.
I hope so.
Who He's a U.S. ambassador to the Czech Republic, and he was born on July 4th, so very appropriate. Nice. He's born on Independence Day, and he's an ambassador for the United States. He did some stuff before he was the ambassador. He was in the FBI. He investigated some civil rights violations in the 1960s. He was involved in some weird ways of the Watergate break-in. So you remember in June 1972, the big Watergate scandal happened?
Yes.
He was assigned essentially to hold Martha Mitchell, who was then the wife of then United States Attorney General John N. Mitchell. He was assigned to essentially hold her in her hotel room in California so that she wouldn't learn about the break-in early and either, you know, and mess with the investigation or deliver information, warn anybody ahead of time. And so there was kind of this controversy about, she talked about how that she was held in the room against her will and that he used physical force to prevent her from speaking to the press, restrained her while she was injected with a sedative. That was confirmed later on by one of the Watergate burglars. So there was this kind of this interesting thing involving Steve King, but now he's the ambassador to the Czech Republic, which is interesting.
Sounds like the next Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks movie.
I'm
doing it. Yep,
okay, who plays Martha Mitchell?
Oh, man. Well, let's see. I need a picture of her face. She sounds...
I have no idea what she looks like. Just read...
I'm going to say Helen Mirren just because I want to see her in things with...
I feel like... Okay. Maybe I don't understand the like, you know, demographics of modern politics, but I feel like the woman who's married to the current attorney general wouldn't be Helen Mirren's age. Am I crazy? How old is the current attorney general? Does anyone know?
Nah, write that one in.
Does anyone? Okay, who knows who the? Okay, Jefferson. Well, maybe so. Actually, you know what? I'm totally wrong. I'm looking at him right now. Attorney General is Jefferson Sessions. He was born in 1946, so that makes him what? He's like 180 years old.
yeah, that adds up. 1946. What is like 70, 80 years old?
Yeah, so I guess Helen Mirren could be Martha Mitchell. Okay, fine. I'm wrong.
I think she's only in her 60s, late 60s. All right. So.
Fair. That's good. Anyway, so those are just a few of the Stephen Kings I want to mention, but not going to deep dive into any of them. But I believe, Adam, that you might be about to.
Yes. Okay, so I have our first candidate tonight. He is a Gaelic football player. And not like the best career or anything. He started, debuted for Cavan in 1980.
Yeah.
Didn't have, again, too much early success. Ended up winning a Railway Cup medal with Ulster in 1984. And then kind of went on to go for a run for the National Football League Championship in Division II. So he's, you know, had some success. He eventually, after that, they went on to the same year, defeated the Derry in a final game for the Dr. McKenna Cup. And if you hear all these names, Davis, and you think these are really weird names to be naming your cups, that's because Gaelic football in itself, it's kind of very different from how we normally do sports. So I had the pleasure of going to Ireland over the past summer last year. Spent about a week there, had a lot of fun, but really one of the most eye-opening things to me was the love for Gaelic sports. So Gaelic football, Davis, if you want me to tell you how it is, have you ever heard of Gaelic football?
Please, I
want to
know so badly.
I got to watch a match of this. They were kind of ending their season when I was up there. I actually picked a team. I think I picked Kerry County, actually, to be my team, quote unquote.
Nice.
because we got introduced by this lovely family who we just sat at their house one Sunday and didn't even really know them that well. And they just told us about Irish sports and what they were about. And so Gaelic football kind of plays a little different. Like if you imagine rugby, that's kind of how it is. It's a little bit like rugby. It's a little less contact though. And so, but on the edges of this court or the pitch, as they call it, you'll have goalposts. So it's like kind of like an American goalpost. But if you were to take the two top pylons and just continue them and make them reach the ground.
Right.
And also, yes, they're huge. They go up in the air so high. So you can score points by either kicking the ball into either the bottom or the top point Or fisting the ball. So you're not allowed to throw the ball in this game whatsoever. If your hand, your hand comes into contact with it in an open palm, that's considered a foul and you turn the ball over. So you have to basically punch the ball wherever you want it to go, which is so cool. Like, I also kind of like, how did you come up with that rule? It seems like one of those rules. Like, also, you can't throw it. You got to punch it. And they
it sounds like one of those rules that as the whoever created the game was playing it, his, you know, big brother like threw it in the goal and he's like, no, wait, you can't do that. They're playing a little bit of Calvin ball there is what it sounds like.
Yeah, for sure. And so again, watching one of these games and not knowing what's going on, super confusing. Yeah. The thing I think I like about it most is it's one of the last remaining amateur sports. Basically what that means, and this kind of applies to a few of the other like hurling and whatnot. So basically teams are broken up into counties. I imagine it's kind of like how we do our state teams, but for them it's just county. It's county pride and that's how it is. But most of the people there all the people there are amateurs. So none of the coaches, none of the refs, none of the players, no one gets paid, which I just think is cool. So, you know, it's like a very like close to the heart thing. Like, oh, my son played in this. He's, you know, a grocer down at the local supermarket and he goes out on weekends and plays or, you know, so on and so forth. And so it's just like a really cool, like, okay, you know that these people are knocking each other's teeth out for the love of the game.
Right.
So that's what I love about it.
Okay. I would love it. I feel like I got to look it up on YouTube now. Like I got to go see this crazy sport in action. Okay. I've got one that I want to talk about. Okay. Real quick. So I have a Stephen King who is actually a little bit older. So he was born in 1841. He lived till 1915. Okay. He was a sketcher. He was a surveyor. He was an explorer. And so he was actually part of the very last, what's called the John McDougall Stewart Expedition. So the Stewart Expedition happened from 1861 to 1862. And so Stephen King would have been 20 and 21 years old at this point. Okay. And so this expedition is famous for successfully crossing Australia from south to north. So they basically crossed the whole continent. He worked for his father for a little while, left in 1861, joined this Transcontinental Party, and he says that he endured great hardships on the 4,000-mile journey, which lasted from lasted from October 1st until February of 2 years later. So October 1st, 1861 to February 1863. In the middle of that, kind of on July 25th, 1862, they reached the north coast of Australia and says they hoisted the Union Jack on the shores of Adam Bay. Not only was he kind of along for the ride, part of the expedition, but he was actually sort of the recorder, like the artist for the expedition. He made sketches of the expedition for the leader. He did that, and then he joined an expedition to the Northern Territory, put in charge of some stock there. Basically, they were taking some sheep up to the northern part of Australia. They, you know, put some sheep out, and then he got in charge of some horses and carried those to the head of the Adelaide River in Australia. But during that journey, he actually got malaria. So he was really ill, very sick with malaria, carried back to the depot, kind of where they started from. And the doctor came and said, you need to like go back. You have to peace out. You got to go back to Adelaide. Just kind of a neat life. He was granted honorary membership of the Royal Geographical Society of Australasia, made an honorary member of the Australian Natives Association, and then he actually has lots of places in Australia that are named for him. So the King River, King's Creek, King's Pond, and then a street named King Place, and then a couple of King Streets are all named after him. So just an interesting man that honestly did a lot for the country of Australia and exploring their land and kind of surveying their area. He kind of was self-made man, pulled himself up by his bootstraps, and then sold his land and some of his stock, and then went to go survey. So just kind of an interesting man that's like, okay, he values the land that he's from.
That's a cool story. I like that. There are two things I want to point out. A, I don't understand why anyone wants to go through the middle of Australia.
Right?
Not from there. But, like, I think a billion different things can kill you. That are exclusively,
I mean, everything in Australia is trying to murder you.
Exactly. So, A, just the guts that it takes to do something like that. And, two, you said he got malaria later on a different expedition. And I just, you know, you watch movies. I don't know if you watched a movie. I think it was called Lost City of Z. I watched it on a plane. I thought it was pretty good. But basically, there's a point in the movie where they're deep in this expedition, okay? Gets malaria, gets sick in some way, shape, or form. And I can't think of, a worse scenario to get a debilitating disease in. Like, you just spent so much time getting to your halfway, maybe, to your destination.
Right.
Cutting down bramble, trekking up, inhospitable places. You get malaria, and then you're, A, sick, maybe even bedridden, and they're like, you just gotta go back. Your time here has been pointless.
You've done no way.
Thank you for what you have not done.
Thank you for nothing.
This is so, malaria seems like the most debilitating disease for any kind of explorer.
It's the worst. So I think going back to the point of Australia, everything in Australia is trying to destroy you and murder you and leave you 6 feet under the ground. My favorite / most terrifying Australian natural phenomenon is, have you ever heard of the Gimpy Gimpy tree? You ever heard of this?
That's not a real thing.
It's true. Gimpy Gimpy, G-Y-M-P-I, G-Y-M-P-I, two words, Gimpy Gimpy tree. Okay. This is something that I've known about previously to this, but I just looked it up again because it's so interesting. So it's also known as the suicide plant. So it's basically this plant. It's like these nettles that exist in Australia. They're Australia only, obviously, duh, because Australia is, you have to be superhuman to even make it there.
Yeah.
So basically, this person, that Marina Hurley, who is a botanist, this is how she describes touching the Gimpy Gimpy tree. It's like being burned by hot acid and electrocuted at the same time. there was a guy who named Cyril Bromley, who was a serviceman in World War II. During World War II training exercises, he fell into one of the plants and he ended up strapped to a hospital bed, quote unquote, as mad as a cut snake.
What?
There was another botanist, Ernie Ryder, who got hit in the face and arm and chest in 1963. And it wasn't until 1965 that the pain stopped.
What?
The Gimpy Gimpy tree. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. That's a side note. But Australia wants you to be dead and also wants you to be in horrible, horrible pain until you die.
I'm going to Australia at the end of the summer, but I might be canceling my tickets right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Anyway, that's Australia for you.
Nice. Okay, ready for my next one?
Absolutely.
Sweet. Okay, so I have Stephen King, the journalist.
Okay.
So, again, did not intend this to be how it is, but kind of sticking to the Irish roots here. This guy, he graduated for the first degree with political science from Oxford University and completed a Master of Social Science and Humanities degree at the University of Ulster. It was also, on top of all this other stuff, which is, for me, this is 30 years of school. He's also a doctor of philosophy from the Queen's University of Belfast. So this guy, he's a smart guy. So he is a political commentator and is known for his public relations consulting. He's a former chief political advisor for the Nobel laureate David Trimble.
Oh, cool.
So one of the things that kind of fascinated me about him, he was a negotiator for the Ulster Unionist Party. So this is one of the four major parties that make up Northern Ireland government. He was a key negotiator in their issues of human rights, cultural issues, equality, and also took part in the multi-party talks leading to the Good Friday Agreement.
Interesting.
You know what the Good Friday Agreement is?
I have heard of it. Will you remind me, though?
Okay, so I don't want to get way too much into it, but it is pretty significant.
Okay.
So obviously, Northern Ireland, if you do not know, there's a huge amount of for years and years and years, this political turmoil between like the Protestants and the Catholics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hundreds of deaths, killings on both sides, like very, you know, line in the sand divided here.
Yeah.
There was a couple attempts at ceasefires, you know, kind of leading up to it. After the second ceasefire kind of took place, right, the Good Friday Agreement started becoming brokered. The agreement restored self-government to Northern Ireland on the basis of power sharing.
Yeah.
So I guess just the four different parties, and it included reform to the RUC, renaming it the Police Service of Northern Ireland.
Okay.
Yeah. So this just created like good positive change to Northern Ireland, and he was a pretty big part of that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just thought that was cool. He in 1996, he began writing a weekly column for the Belfast Telegraph before he transferred eventually to the Irish Examiner. So, yeah, kind of an interesting guy. I also
for
found
sure.
that so he did have a little bit of controversy too, in which I don't really know. Like this is a noted fact, but it was he had a partner named Jean-Claude Mandrang, a gentleman who committed suicide by an overdose eventually. So that was sad. But also it was noted that one of the main political parties like publicly denounced him for his marriage to this guy. It's kind of an interesting, like, oh, that's a little sad note on his life and whatnot. So,
yeah, for sure.
So that's Stephen King, the journalist.
Okay. Right on. Very cool. Sounds like an interesting guy. Sounds like he's, you know, had his, not necessarily his hand in a lot of pies, but like just involved in a lot of different things in the political and journalistic realms for sure.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Cool. I'm gonna throw a curveball at you. You ready?
Okay.
So my last Stephen King is a guy named Bathory Istvan. So His Stephen King, because his name is Stephen and he's a king. So we're going with King Stephen for the last one.
Okay.
So Stephen Bathory, King Stephen here.
In, Davis, and you're already throwing these kind of changes, eh?
That's right. Yeah. I'm mixing it up. We're going to mix it up here. We're going to do King Stephen.
Okay.
So there are actually lots of King Stephens, which is funny. I just like looked it up because we did some Stephen Kings and I was like, I wonder if there are King Stephens. There are several. Okay. One of the most well-known ones was King Stephen of England, who was the grandson of William the Conqueror.
Okay.
But I'm not going to talk about him. I'm talking about Stephen Bathory, who was in the 1500s, he was a king of Poland. Stephen Bathory was born in 1533, and he was born in Transylvania. So he's probably a vampire, first of all. So, but aside from everything else that we talk about and aside from the things that he really actually did, also understand he was a vampire and probably is still alive wandering the streets of Portland, Oregon, with Edward Cullen, or wherever it was. Forks? Is it Forks? Have you read Twilight? I think it's Forks,
no,
right?
I
Forks, Washington.
Read Twilight, Davis. Come on. Okay. I haven't read those books.
He was the king of Poland. Before that, he was actually the prince of Transylvania. So tell me he's not a vampire. I won't believe you. There's no chance.
Gotta be.
But he was engaged to a woman named Anna. I'm going to butcher the Polish here, but it's Jagiellon. Jagiellon? However you want to say that in Polish, who she was the daughter of. So there's a king, he died, his brother took the throne, the brother died, and then Anna was his daughter. So she became queen, and because King Stephen was married to her, he became king. He was King Stephen. So he actually, he only reigned for a decade. Like he only was in power for 10 years, but he is considered to be one of the most successful kings in Polish history.
Hmm.
Specifically militarily. I mean, he was a military man. Basically, spoiler alert, this is his kind of big achievement. He had a victorious campaign against Russia when Russia was ruled by Ivan the Terrible. So he went in, he conquered some cities in Russia. He ended up, you know, having such great success militarily that Ivan the Terrible was forced to make a treaty with him. Really cool, interesting guy. He, not much is known about his childhood. He had at least five siblings. He was kind of a feudal lord and military commander. There was a civil war, basically between him when he was elected Prince of Transylvania. And then another man who was supported by the Habsburgs. So So that like the Habsburg dynasty.
Yeah.
Same family, but earlier. Okay. And then later on, this is pretty cool. He tried to play, I don't think he was successful, but he tried to play the Ottoman Empire, Turkey today, like the big empire that was the Ottomans. He tried to play them against the Holy Roman Empire so that he could strengthen Transylvania's position in the world, which is pretty tight. Like a pretty sweet, like picking two of the most, maybe the two most influential empires in the world at that point, at least in his area of the world, and saying, you know what? I'm representing smaller, less powerful Transylvania. I'm going to play you off each other and I'm going to benefit from it. Pretty sweet.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, anyway, he had a really difficult beginning to his reign. He eventually sort of solidified his power, solidified his prestige there as the holder of the throne. Then he essentially went after Ivan the Terrible. We've talked about it. He laid siege to a couple of cities. And then eventually on December 13th, Ivan the Terrible conceded negotiations that concluded with the truce of Jam Zapolsky on January 15th. And the treaty, this is a pretty, it's kind of a side note, but it's pretty sweet. The treaty was favorable to the Commonwealth of Poland. So the treaty actually worked out more in favor of King Stephen than it did of Ivan the Terrible, which is pretty cool. I think cool.
You just enjoy saying Ivan the Terrible.
I love it. I can't get enough of it. I would say it all day. I'm a big fan. So eventually, towards the end of his life, King Stephen allowed his kind of right-hand man, a man named Zamoyski, to execute kind of this guy who had been on essentially death row for like a decade. And there was some political conflict between King Stephen and this man's family. And so they sort of painted it politically as the clash between the monarch and the nobility. So it's like the king is against the people, the nobles, and the nobles are against the king. And so this spin kind of created a major recurring controversy within Polish politics for like lots of years. He died in 1586 with no legitimate children. So he didn't have anyone as an heir. But here's my favorite thing about King Stephen. Here's where he gets real dope to me. So it says that he actively promoted his own legend. So during his life, he sponsored a number of works about his own life and achievements. Everything from historical treatises to poetry. He was featured in the works of several prominent like Polish artists. And so essentially just like I'm a big fan of this guy. After World War II, he became a little bit more of a controversial figure. There was some historians that wanted to question his kind of politics, but his good image did kind of stay firm, remain in good standing with the public. And then right immediately after the Second World War, there was a pretty popular Polish historian who, again, kind of reinforced the legend and legacy of King Stephen. So I'm a big fan. I think he's got guts. He's got moxie, kid. He's interesting. The fact that he went after Ivan the Terrible and took some of his cities is pretty cool. And the fact that he was like, you know what? I'm freaking sweet. I'm going to make sure people know I'm freaking sweet.
You know what they say, man.
What do they say?
When the legend becomes fact, print the legend.
There you go. Perfect. So anyway, that's I sort of cheated a little bit. Not really Stephen King, but he's King Stephen, and I'm a big fan. I had to talk about it. I think he's awesome.
Oh man, that's cool. I like that. So those are our four guys. I got some more fun facts about Stephen King, author, if you want to hear about him.
Let's do it.
So first off, what's your favorite Stephen King, you can say book or movie, whichever you'd prefer.
Dude, adaptation, if you will. So like I said, the only one that I've read is It. So that's the only Stephen King I read. It's a hard one for me. I think I like recognize that The Shining movie is a phenomenal film. And I think they did a really, really good job with that movie. I enjoy it a ton. But I really, really liked It. Like the new It movie. Oh, yeah. I've never seen the old one. I haven't seen the one from the 80s with Tim Curry. I really enjoyed the new one. Like I've seen it twice, and I don't usually rewatch horror movies. Like once I get the scares, I'm like, oh, whatever. I really, really enjoy horror films, but I don't usually rewatch them. But that's one that I honestly, a surprising amount, I will think about again and be like, man, I could totally watch It right now, or like I want to. I think they did a really good job with it. And I think it's just a very interesting story of something in a town that's like, it doesn't matter what you're afraid of, this thing is going to take that shape and destroy your life and also the lives of the people that you love because of that thing. So, interesting concept, interesting idea. I really liked the new It movie, surprisingly.
Have you seen the Goosebumps movie?
So I watched probably like 3/4 of it, and guess what? I fell asleep in the middle of it. So that's a recurring theme in my life. Yeah,
you really gotta stop doing that.
I know, I seriously do.
Well, and I bring this up because I'm pretty sure Stephen King makes a cameo in that movie, which is
I'm pretty sure you're right. I think I remember seeing him.
Yeah, and so which is I remember seeing it, oh, that's Stephen King,
right?
And so I think it's funny when he pops up in cameos, but the fact that I really find interesting is he is a cameo in one of his own books, which
that's funny. Brave. I know. I love that. That's in the Dark Tower, right?
Yes. In the Dark Tower, one of the later versions of it. So basically how it goes is the main protagonist goes into the world and he basically captures Stephen King because he thinks that Stephen King is like,
right.
It's like a world that like only the first Dark Tower book was written. And then Stephen King convinces the character that he is writing the story. It's the most meta thing I've ever heard about.
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's just like, I can get away with this.
Yeah,
for sure. And just
absolutely.
Like,
he's Stephen King. He can do what he wants.
Yeah. And I just think that's so interesting. There's like, I'm going to put myself in this book right now. I physically want to be here. So, Davis.
Yes.
Who do you think deserves to be Stephen King?
This one honestly may be the toughest one that I've looked that we've done so far. Like, I think it's the closest call. I think Stephen King, the author, is so prolific and he's done such good work in a genre that doesn't have a lot of really good authors in it. You know, like horror, science fiction, fantasy. There are some good authors, but there are a lot of garbage authors in those, you know, genres of fiction. And Stephen King has killed it. And the fact that he's been so involved and he's wanted other people to come alongside and write well, and he's been involved with the movies that have been made about his books. I think he is deservedly the most recognizable Stephen King for a reason. And it's hard for me to say that he shouldn't be. That being said, who do I think is the dopest and who I think has shaped the future of a country more than anyone? I think King Stephen of Poland, right? Stephen Bathory, who's maybe not technically a Stephen King, but he is a King Stephen, and so I'm going to put him in there. I think King Stephen Bathory, because he fought Russia, because he established kind of a precedent for Poland, I think that he's the one that maybe has the most legitimate claim to being the famous King Stephen King. And I think if you put him up against Stephen King, the author, in the country of Poland specifically, I'm not sure who would come out on top populator wise. So I think this is a tie for me. I think it's a toss up between those two men.
Well, I agree. The King of Horror is the King of Horror. And so once you get to that level of esteem, it's kind of hard to. And I feel like we're going to have to keep saying this for most of our people. Like, yes, they're deservedly famous for a reason. I really liked the surveyor guy from Australia. Thought that was cool. And the tenacity of a guy to, I'm about to spend the next 3 years of my life exploring some of the most unexplored, uninhabitable portions of the world. Like, that takes gall, and I can appreciate that. And so I like his story. I like his gusto and his, you know, desire to keep pushing even when this gets tough. So, I mean,
it's good
to get malaria and then still do exhibitions.
Cool.
He's got my vote for sure.
There you go. Sounds like we're split. Sounds like there's lots of good candidates here, but I'm glad we got to talk about him for a little while.
Yes, that's great. Well, I think that's it for me. Do you have anything else?
No, nothing else for me. Just wanted to say again, you can find us on the web. We're going to have a Facebook page up. Hopefully, by the time you hear this, we'll have a Facebook page. If you have any questions for us, or if you have any names that we should, famous people we should do, or if you know anyone that shares a name with someone famous, we want to hear from you. Please, please, please want to hear from you. You can reach us at inawcast@gmail.com. That's inawcast@gmail.com.
Yes, song credit goes to Broken for Free for their song Luminous. Thank you for letting us use that. And we'll see you guys soon.